Well, you probably know that you should spend pretty much every day being physically active, but what if you haven't done that and you're trying to figure out how to get started with it? My guests today are here to help us, you and me, set out an exercise routine that's right and will hopefully keep you injury-free. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guests today are Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have you back, Lori. Thanks for coming.
Good to be here.
Also, Bill Boisenault, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. And Bill, great to see you as well.
Great to be back. Thank you, Larry.
I've got a program kind of going. You know, I do my little 5K in the morning.
And, good for you.
And that's basically, you know, and then I do a lot of walking during the days, a couple miles at least.
Yeah, that additional. Counts.
So what did you do over the winter? Did you do your 5K in the morning all winter long?
Yeah, pretty much.
So you never stopped.
No.
So, yeah, the problem comes for people who, you know, the weather gets bad and it's dark early in the morning and the roads are slippery and uneven. And so
for months.
And then they decide, oh, it's nice out. I'm going to start it up again. And then they think they can just pick up where they left off. You know, if you can keep going all winter long, that's great. It makes the transition much easier. But when you've dropped it and have to pick it up again in the spring, that's when you can get in trouble.
And we've talked a lot about transitioning. When you're starting either just the fact it's a new activity or you're restarting an older activity, it's like Lori said, don't start up where you left off, you know, 3-4 months ago. And so start at, you know, a reduced intensity, maybe a reduced distance or time frame, and then over a period of a few weeks, start building back up to where you were before, and there's much less chance of injury.
So you can think of your exercise in terms of frequency. That is, how often do you do it? Do you need a day rest in between or not? Intensity, that is, how hard is it? So taking the running example, are you just walking and jogging or are you sprinting? Mm-hmm. And then the duration is how long you're doing it. So those are the variables you can play with. So you may start out with a lower duration or a lower intensity and do a frequency of every other day. And then if you want to pick it up, then you can either increase the duration a little bit, or you can step up the pace a little bit, or you can do it more frequently, but you shouldn't do all three at once.
Do you need to consult with a doctor before you do this or not? And if you do...
Well, the recommendations are if you're over, well, boy, that's changed, the age at which you need to seek your doctor's permission. For women, it's bumped up to nearly 50.
Right.
And men, it's a little bit lower to where you should get clearance from your physician before starting an exercise program. And certainly, if you have any medical problems, if you have heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, any of those kinds of things, or you're overweight, you should check in with your physician first and get a health check and make sure that you're healthy to start and get some recommendations on what kinds of activities might be best for you given your medical status.
Yeah, I think that's really important. There are people with existing conditions, as Lori mentioned, and they should check in if they're going to start something new or looking to really increase the intensity. But other people who have a clean bill of health, which just have been leading a sedentary lifestyle and are thinking of starting a new activity, again, checking in with the doc, having a physical is a really good place to start.
You know, Steve in Iron River has a kind of a cool comment or question that relates to this. Steve, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. My preferred form of exercise is swimming, but the first 10 or 15 or maybe even 20 minutes of my swimming, I am so bored, I just want to quit and get out of the pool and go home. But after 15 or 20 minutes, it seems like my attitude changes, and I kind of end up in sort of a blissful state where I my half an hour that I normally swim comes up, and I think, oh, I just want to go at least 10 more minutes. I'm wondering if there's some endorphins or something that get released after you exercise for a while that changes your mental attitude.
So why is that first 15 minutes of exercise boring
so
to Steve and perhaps to other people?
I always think of it as inertia. It's like getting yourself up off the couch. For me, the hard part is getting up, changing my clothes, you know, all the logistics that are associated with it. And with the pool, it's like getting in the cold water. But from a physiologic point of view, yes, there are changes that happen. So when you start that exercise, you get shifts in your blood flow to the working muscles. You just get a bunch of physiologic changes in your heart rate. You get, you know, vasodilation of some of your vessels and so on. But you get what you mentioned, and that's this release of endorphins and kephalins that have kind of a calm and meditative effect. And I think that it's particularly true for rhythmic activities such as running and swimming also because of that rhythm. And when you're swimming, unless you're swimming with a stereo on, you know, a lot of sound is just muffled and you just have the rhythm and the sound of your breathing. And it does put you in a bit of a meditative state.
Yeah. Sounds like Steve sticks with it, though. He doesn't stop. I mean, this could be an issue if after 5 minutes you quit. You're so bored, you quit. And then I'd recommend maybe finding some different activity that you just enjoy more. Or sometimes exercising in groups. It can be a group of two or three where maybe a day where you're not all that interested, but your partner says, let's go, let's get out there. And you push each other a little bit. It can help overcome the inertia.
Yeah, and I think Steve makes a good point, and that is a lot of people can't get past that first 10 or 15 minutes because they get bored, it's too uncomfortable, and they can't ever get to that next level where you get that endorphin release and you get that rhythm to your breathing, and everything is in homeostasis. Your oxygen delivery system, your changes in your blood flow to the working muscles to where you're not feeling, you know, the pain and the heaviness in your legs or your arms or your chest, whatever it is, and your body accommodates to that. But it takes a little bit of time to reach that new level of homeostasis. And then once you're there, you have that rhythm. It feels good.
Yeah. It's funny. I was just thinking about this. The 10 minutes before you start are sometimes, you know, you're laying in bed if it's a morning thing.
Right.
But I was thinking about the days of the week that I like the best. And for me, the days of the week that I most look forward to are Tuesday and Saturday. Tuesday, this is going to sound strange, is garbage day. But it's also the day that everybody puts out, or people often put out the old antique chair or the table or the chest of drawers.
So you shop.
I actually shop, and I have stopped and picked up chairs and dragged them back to the house and sanded them down and painted them. And
dumpster diving.
And so that's Tuesday. And Saturday, I like it because there's always – I go right by the Batch Bakehouse, and there's some bakery in there.
And I pick that up.
And I put that in the bag and something to for us to enjoy when I get back.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect. Oh, my sister and I, when we lived on the east side, used to bike to Stoughton to go to Fosdell's Bakery. So we'd bike for bakeries. We'd bike down there and have some pastry, and then we'd bike back.
It's a motivator.
It is a motivator. Whatever it takes. But that's a good point about exercise, and that is people sometimes think, well, I should do this. I should run, or I should bike, or I should this or that, or I should go take this class. There's no should. The only thing you should do is something that you enjoy, because if it's something you don't like, you're not going to stick with it. You'll never make it past that first 10 or 15
that's
minutes.
The key. When I'm working with somebody in the clinic, once we get over the hump and they're recovering or looking more long term, the discussion turns to, well, what do you like to do? You know, what do you have access to in terms of equipment or time? How much time can you build into your week? And this doesn't fit Steve, but some of the boredom comes from doing the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so just finding a second or third activity, and we've talked about the benefits of cross-training anyways to help prevent repetitive overuse types of conditions. So mixing and matching what you do, even if you're doing core work or you're doing weightlifting, you know, there's different ways you can design a program to give you a little variability. But working out, exercising with a partner or partners can really help with this.
Taking a look at an exercise program, starting an exercise program or continuing the one you're working on, and taking a look at any aches or pains or sprains or strains that you might have questions about, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can leave a question or a comment there. Bill, you mentioned time, and let's go back to that. You know, I've seen different comments about how much exercise we should have every day and how much time we should be out there or how many miles or what have you. What is the current thinking on this, Laurie and Bill?
The American College of Sports Medicine says 4 to 5 days a week for a minimum of 30 minutes. And you can mix that up. So, you know, I don't have it in my head, but they have a formula which you can actually access if you go to the American College of Sports Medicine's website. But they talk about adding in balance and flexibility exercises, and that they've kind of incorporated this concept of the brief, intense duration, the brief, intense exercise. So you can do, you know, 10 minutes of intense exercise and then 10 minutes of weight training and 10 minutes of flexibility or things like that. It's no longer the 35 minutes of cardiorespiratory training like we used to think, like you have to be on a bike for 35 minutes or you have to run for 35 minutes. But they've created kind of this cafeteria menu of things that include balance, flexibility, weight training, and cardiorespiratory that are both, you know, longer duration, lower intensity, or the shorter duration, higher intensity.
Mm-hmm. My doctor said, you know, golf isn't a bad sport at all and good for you, actually, once you're walking?
Walking on the course instead of the cart.
Right, right. Yeah. You have to be in there. It does incorporate a lot of things. First of all, you are walking a lot if you do walk. Plus, it's really nice trunk mobility. So for Bill and I, who see a lot of people in spine, you know, and even my dad was here this weekend, and he has such bad stenosis. But I'm telling you, the guy golfs every day. Well, it's perfect because you can bend over. Right. So as long as he can bend over, man, he's happy as a clam. So he can bend over, he can still wail on that ball, and he walks, and it's good. It's good exercise for him. But I think if he wasn't golfing, he'd be much more disabled than he is.
Yeah.
But that keeps him mobile, and it keeps him out. And it's also very social, which is a really important component as people get older.
And depending on the course, you may get some swimming in. Yeah, there's water holes, or at least some wading anyways. No, the walking is the key and not using the cart. And I understand there's sometimes it's required or certain days of the week are required, but it's, you know, there's some hills typically, and it's good. Both.
And you're gonna walk at least 5 miles, you know, in a 18-hole course. And most 18-hole courses, you're going to walk five miles.
That's right.
Okay.
Probably,
so.
That's right.
So that's a good walk.
Yeah, yes,
and
it is.
Swinging a club and
pulling
that bag along or carrying that bag, you bet. Claire in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, love the show. I have a question, and I hope it's appropriate for your guest. I have a teenage daughter who actually went overboard on fitness. It happened quite quickly. I think that the technical name that the doctors give it is anorexia, which means that she wasn't trying to get too thin, but she started taking not only her fitness, but also then healthy eating to an extreme that became so unhealthy that she lost an extreme amount of weight very quickly. So we're on the recovery track, and we know we want to build muscle for her. She's very, very open to working with doctors and mom and dad here. There's just so much information out there. My question is how do you feel about these protein drinks? Soy, whey, egg white.
Yep.
Hemp, you name it.
Yep.
And then the second question I would have is there a particular muscle building routine that you might recommend?
Oh, what great questions. So The thinking on this, particularly in young girls, and the disordered eating and so on, is shifting to some extent. And recently I was on a panel that that looked at this question, and the nutritionists who were on that panel strongly recommended those protein drinks and protein bars, particularly in this age group. It's really nice if you can use a protein drink that incorporates calcium and vitamin D to build strong bones. This is a really essential time, particularly for girls, to build their bone bank. And so they need a lot of calcium, vitamin D, and the protein. Those are really important components. And basically, the nutritionists would say that that those are perfectly appropriate. They're easy to fix. They're pretty easy to find. And the protein bars are, there's a lot of them out there to choose from. So find something that she likes and have her keep a couple of those in her bag. It's particularly important to ingest that protein right after you exercise, within 15 minutes of completing your exercise session. So I would strongly encourage her to do that. In terms of weight training, we want her to be strong and build bone and build muscle, but you want to be careful not to lift heavy in this age group. So in that 14-year-old, that sort of early adolescent, the idea is to train for form, so that they learn to lift correctly using the right muscles, the right posture, but not to overload. Most of them still have open epiphyses. And you don't want to damage those epiphyses. So, you know, lighter weights, more duration, and looking at proper form. That being said, she should work with a certified strength and conditioning specialist, someone who's certified by the American College of Sports Medicine in that, so that they can give her appropriate guidance. You know, it's worth it trying to find somebody in your community who is a certified strength and conditioning specialist. And many physical therapists, for example, many of our staff here at UW Sports Medicine are also strength and conditioning specialists. So they have that benefit of both the medical end and the strength and conditioning end.
And Milwaukee, I'm sure you
In Milwaukee, you can find someone.
Yeah. You know, Lori's right.
Yeah, we're in Waukesha, and actually she has five older siblings. One of them is a physical therapy, and she has a namesake aunt that actually taught. She's retired now, but she was a professor who taught kinesiology and physical therapy.
Oh, that's good.
Well, you have some good resources to turn to.
We do have some good resources, but I think being the 14-year-old here, she wants some independence in her recovery, and I applaud that in her, but she clearly doesn't know what to do.
Well, so the guidance shouldn't come from you.
Yeah, outside the family would be the recommendation. Yeah.
And I got to admit, not coming from mom is a big benefit
right
now.
Yep.
Yep, absolutely. Well, good luck to you, Claire, and mm-hmm. Thank you so much
for taking the call. And I would bike for bakery any day.
Sounds like T-shirt material.
It does. Biking for bakeries. Yep.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks very much. And good luck with you, and good luck with your daughter, to your daughter as well. Talking today about exercise and some of the aches and pains that can be associated with, maybe not with, sometimes with exercise, but sometimes with other activities that you and I get involved with. With our guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne-Brody, I'm Larry Mueller. Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have an exercise question, or maybe you've got an ache, a pain you want to talk about, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. We just lost a couple of calls, so we've got some extra. We've got some lines open for you. Again, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about golf, and one of the things to really watch for is people with back pain. You know, they really want to get back out on the golf course. So it's important for them to build some core strength, and to if they're just having trouble getting over the hump, if they've had a back surgery or they're having some back pain due to a disc injury or some degenerative joint disease, you know, seeing a physical therapist who specializes in golf mechanics or people who go through certification courses in golf can help them with their stroke to make them hopefully improve their swing and their golf game, but at the same time protect their back.
Yeah, exactly. The core strengthening is important. Hip flexibility is really important, and also upper back to help protect, take load off the low back. Also, a number of golfers develop shoulder problems over the years, again, with the repetition and their swing. And upper back and neck mobility is really important to take pressure off the shoulders as well. And so if you can go to a practitioner who has the physical therapy background and a golf background, can tweak the swing a little bit, can make a big difference.
And a friend who said I've observed it. He's taken a few strokes off his average. He took up yoga.
There you go.
It made him a lot more flexible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so his swing improved considerably. Yeah. And as a result, his score
lowered
as well.
Excellent.
We had an email from Barb who's like your opinion about using a rebounder for exercise. She's 66, weighs about 50 pounds too much. Walk outside a few miles some days, but sometimes it's too hot, too cold, too rainy, too snowy. You get the idea. Thought a few minutes a day on a rebounder might be a good way to help increase my overall muscle strength as well as my sense of balance. What do you think? First, what is a rebounder, and then what do you think about them?
Well, if it's what I think, it's like a small trampoline. We call it like a mini trampoline, where you can run in place, you can jump, you can do jumping jacks, and we use it quite a bit in the clinic, actually. And it's a way to get some endurance work in, and you don't quite have the pounding on the joints that you get with the running or jumping rope on a harder surface. You work muscles around the foot and ankle and calves differently. And so, again, it's like our discussion earlier this morning to transition into will help you prevent having a lot of muscle soreness and aching from doing too much too soon. But I think it would be a reasonable alternative to the walking if the weather is lousy outside. And as I talked, you can jump in place, you can do jumping jacks, you can gently run in place, you can add arm movement, which then again would be a way to progress the balance component and get your heart rate up a little bit higher. But probably starting with just maybe 2 or 3 minutes and then get off, maybe do some stretching, get back on again to allow especially the lower leg muscles to get used to that activity.
So one of the things about picking an exercise is asking yourself, what's the purpose? So, she mentioned that she was 50 pounds overweight. I don't know if the idea is to lose weight or if the idea is to improve her balance or some component of both. But I would approach the exercise on the rebounder differently if I was trying to lose weight versus trying to improve my balance. So kind of matching the exercise to what your goal is would be important.
Mm-hmm. What would you be more sort of active on it if you were trying to lose weight?
Trying to lose weight, I'd get my heart rate up. For an exercise to be cardiorespiratory, it's supposed to be, somewhere between 60 and 80% of your maximum heart rate. And so, sometimes I see people exercising, but they're exercising at such a low intensity that it's not really progressing them from a cardiorespiratory perspective. It will continue to burn calories, but not at the same rate as if you went at it more intensely.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn in Minneapolis has a question. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. So I started running about 3 years ago. I'm 50 years old, and about 6 months ago started having some heel pain and basically the traditional plantar fasciitis symptoms. It got to where I basically was hobbling all the time, so gave up running for a little bit, had a cortisone injection, and I'm trying to ease my way back into running. However, I really, really like to run. I don't want to delay my progress of healing, but I also understand that this can be a kind of a longer term problem. So wanted to get your thoughts on trying to do some running and get your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, I guess the first question would be why you're getting plantar fasciitis in one foot and not the other, or did you have it in both?
Just one.
So why do you have it in one, not the other? What my recommendation would be to go in and see a physical therapist and get an evaluation. Certainly, your physician evaluated you to the extent of making the diagnosis and doing a treatment, but in terms of understanding why it happened in the first place and how to prevent it from coming back, that's a different way to look at the problem. So I would suggest seeing a physical therapist to look at your lower extremity mechanics. For example, do you have a leg length difference that's contributing to one foot having that problem and not the other? Is it how you run? Is it weakness around your hip? Is it an imbalance somewhere? So they can take a look at you and figure out what the underlying cause of that original injury might have been and give you some things to do to try to prevent it. Then as I was getting back into running, I would start with, you know, a lower frequency intensity duration and work my way back into it slowly. And I'd probably also get myself a night splint and start using that now as a preventative rather than trying to add the night splint later should your symptoms return.
Okay. Well, thank you. I have been using the night splint, and that definitely helps so that I don't have the morning tenderness, but hadn't thought about maybe doing the physical therapy route. So
yeah,
I appreciate that.
I think that'd be worth it.
Yeah, this is a common scenario. We've had a number of calls over the years of people who've had an injection. An injection can help with the recovery process in some cases, but like Lori said, once it's gone, try to figure out, so why did it develop in the first place? And the injection doesn't help at all with that. And so we hear from people that this is now their second, third, or fourth episode. And as the episodes pile on, they take longer and longer to recover. So really getting at the bottom line, so why did this begin in the first place? And is it some sort of imbalance? It could have been footwear or a combination of things that someone can help you out with.
Good luck, Carolyn. Thank you for calling. Let me give Jeff in Watertown a chance to join us. Jeff, hi.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Mead. I'm a physician out here, and I had the pleasure, actually, of learning from Lori Tyne when I was in med school, and I learned a ton. But what I didn't learn was how to grow old and not lose my strength and speed. I'm trying to get faster in my running again, because there was a time during, you know, when work was a little bit too much and I wasn't running, and I can run, but I just don't feel that strength and speed in my legs that I once did. And besides getting older and saying that I'm not accepting that I can't get it back, so do I have to do weights, or can I do things like hills and speed workouts for that?
Only your body will tell. Do you have to do weights? No. Would it be helpful? Probably. So, I mean, you understand your physician. You understand muscle physiology. If you're continuing to run and be active at the same level, you will only recruit those muscle fibers that are necessary to work at that level. So if you want to work at a higher level, you have to recruit those type 2 muscle fibers that have been sitting in their Barca lounger for the last X number of years waiting to be called into action. So you can do that by overloading through weight training, because when you overload, obviously you have to recruit those additional motor units. You can also do it by sprinting, because that also, with the increased speed, will require use of those type 2 muscle fibers. So you could get at it either way, and which way will work best for you, I don't know, but you could trial and error. If you really hate doing weights, then you could start with running at different speeds. You might start with a fartlek. Do you remember that word? That term is
I still do fartleks.
You still do fartleks? Yeah. Okay, well, so you're doing some speed work?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, well, I'd continue that and work your way up. So fartlek is a Swedish term for speed play.
Oh.
And we use that a lot in therapy, because people have a most efficient speed. So walking speed. So maybe you've noticed, if you've gone to the mall one day and you're just so tired afterwards, but you felt like you didn't move very fast, it's because you were moving slower than your most efficient speed. So people will tend to move at what's most efficient. So sometimes you have to mentally get yourself out of that that speed. So fartlek training is if you're, for example, on a track, you might sprint the straightaways and jog the curves. Or if you're going a distance, you might jog and then slowly speed up to a sprint and then slowly speed lower your speed again. So that's speed play. So speed play is an easy way to get into higher speed activities before you jump into full-on sprints.
Laurie, hills, stairs, would that be beneficial as well?
Yes, hills and stairs would be good. It's really going to work your calves. So as long as your calves can handle that. Yeah. So,
cool.
So those would be good.
Great. All right.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
And yeah, let us know how you do.
Yeah.
On the aging part or the running part?
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Oh, man. Colleen in Presque Isle. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'm calling because for retired people, I'm would like to suggest that if you get bored with your your routine, which I have done forever, I read a book called Younger Next Year, in which the gentleman, the author, suggested looking at exercise as being your job. And my husband and I have both begun to do that. We know now that this is our job in our retirement years, and it has really changed our attitude about exercise because we know that it it's something that we must do as we get older. That's my comment.
Yeah, that's a good comment. I can relate a bit. As I've gotten older, my reason for exercising has certainly changed compared to 25, 30 years ago. Now I do certain things to make sure I can get the boat in and out of the water in the spring and late fall to carry things from, you know, from the dock up to the house. And so I'm kind of tying it more and more to function, and it gives it a whole different meaning.
Mm-hmm. Similarly, my parents, my mother took up weight training at age 60. And she's going to turn 80 this fall, and she still goes to the gym 3 days a week and lifts her weights. And I'm telling you, if she doesn't get there, she is so cranky. And she can do things. You know, I mean, I look at her peers that were always around when I was a kid, and many of them are sedentary. Like, she was here this weekend, and she commented that a friend can't come to her house anymore because she can't get up the 3 stairs to get into her house. Well,
yep.
You know, that's just too bad. And my parents are very young because they exercise on a regular basis.
Yeah. Colleen, thank you again for calling. I appreciate your call. And we'll give Ben and Kadat a chance to join us next. Hi, Ben, thank you for calling.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I recently, like about a year and a half ago, I had a pelvic injury where I broke my pelvis in 3 places. And some days I have absolutely no pain, and then other days I have just awful pain. So I was wondering if there's anything I could do to help that.
So, Ben, is there a pattern of the awful days, a certain activity or lack of activity that day or the day before that you've recognized over time?
I don't know. Sometimes if I do exercise a little bit, it feels worse. And then other days when I don't exercise, it also feels worse. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a pattern or if it's...
Okay. All right. So it sounds like the pattern is there really hasn't been a distinct pattern yet. And when you have the bad days, what do you do to recover?
Well, some days it's usually when I'm at work that I have the bad days. And I usually just ask for the rest of the day off and relax.
Okay.
And the next day it doesn't feel so bad. But
all right. Have you seen a physical therapist along the way? Since the injury, or within the last 3-4 months?
Not within the last a year, I think. I was seeing a physical therapist, but they said that I was past the point where physical therapy was going to help me progress with my injury anymore. They said
Okay. Well, people do sometimes reach a point of kind of they've reached their threshold, but, you know, sometimes things can change and body adapts and compensates. Maybe going back for even one visit to have them reevaluate you. It may help if you can over a week or two, maybe keep a little diary of the good days, bad days, and the activities on each of those days. Maybe if you bring that in for the therapist, sometimes a story unfolds a little bit or a pattern unfolds. But then talking to the therapist about your work responsibilities and what you do outside of work, and then they can evaluate you. There may be a pattern of weakness or loss of flexibility that either hasn't been worked on or maybe can be worked on in different ways, so the good days outnumber the bad days. But that's the key, is to, you know, a lot of people are on this roller coaster ride. But you want the good, have more good days than bad days, and recover from the bad days faster would be a sign of progress.
Yeah, well, my bad days are rare, but when they are bad days, then they're bad.
Okay. All right. Well, that's reason enough to go back in and kind of get rechecked and see if they find anything different. And but again, really coming in and describing the activities that you need to do and want to do will help guide the therapist in terms of the examination and the home program they set up for you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking about exercise and talking about all those aches and pains and sprains and strains that can come to us as well with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Laurie Time Brody. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Bill Boisenault and Laurie Time Brody. Bill's a professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Laurie, a physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Questions? Call us at 800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Ed in Milwaukee sent us a note. He says, I'm a firefighter, joined a squad that has to do a strenuous swim routine. I was pushing really hard, and now my shoulders hurt pretty bad. They've hurt for the past year. What can I do to help them heal? Should I not swim anymore?
Well, I'm wondering if swimming is an option, because it said that it seemed as though it was part of his job, squad that has to do a strenuous swim routine. So I don't know if it's part of his job or not. But in any case, you know, unless you're a really good and trained swimmer, there's a good chance you're going to develop rotator cuff problems just to the repetitive motion of swimming. So for him to jump in literally and start swimming pretty vigorously, if he's not worked his way up from it, you know, kind of like we talked about at the beginning of the show, working your way into it, building your shoulders up. You know, if we were to see him, if he came to us and said, hey, I'm going to start this strenuous swimming program, what should I do? We would check his shoulder flexibility and make sure he had sufficient flexibility, that he had appropriate neck and upper back flexibility in order to rotate sufficiently so that he doesn't overstrain his shoulders, and put him on a strengthening program for his rotator cuff. So now he's a year deep into it, and now his shoulders hurt. So should he stop? You know, I can't answer that question, but I would suggest that he goes to see somebody, you know, a physical therapist, and there are people who specialize in swimming. We have staff here in our facility who specialize in swim stroke analysis and working with swimmers. So they would look at neck flexibility, upper back flexibility, shoulder flexibility, rotator cuff strength. Then the question would be, his shoulders have hurt for a year. Does he need to stop so that his rotator cuff can calm down? Perhaps. Maybe he needs some modification of a stroke. Maybe he needs some upper back flexibility. It's hard to say, but someone needs to evaluate him and see where his deficits are and get him on the right path, which may or may not include stopping swimming or changing his swimming. Sometimes what we do is give them a mask and snorkel. So, for example, if they lack sufficient neck and upper back flexibility in order to achieve an appropriate stroke, we would give them a mask and snorkel. snorkel so they didn't have to rotate to breathe, and that may take care of it. Sometimes you put fins on their feet so that their legs can provide an additional component and offload the shoulder to some extent. Sometimes that works. So you just have to look at them and see. So there, hopefully that's enough information, Ed.
Yeah, and Ed's in Milwaukee, too, so he's access to plenty.
Sure, there's got to be people there who can do that for him.
Claire in Eau Claire. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm calling because my husband recently had an MRI, and it showed that he has two severely herniated discs in his lower spine. They're very, very painful, and he can hardly stand the pain. The first course of action that his doctor is taking is to refer him to a pain clinic for injections. And I'm just wondering what can be done to heal this and what can be done for the pain as well, because the pain relievers that they've been giving him really haven't even been touching the pain. He's really concerned.
Bill, what do you think?
Claire, how much leg pain is he having compared to back pain?
A lot of leg pain. And now he can't even feel one of his legs.
Okay.
He's got numbness and tingling, he said.
All right.
And that kind of like, it fluctuates between the numbness and the tingling.
And again, that kind of goes along, especially if the pain is below the knees, that nerves are irritated with this. And, well, injections have a role in a really acute phase like this, but this should be done in conjunction with some rehabilitation as well. There are a set of exercises are designed to move the pain up out of the legs toward the back. Before the back pain goes away, the leg symptoms leg pain needs to resolve first, and there's a particular approach to facilitate that. And those exercises and repetitive movements are combined with a lot of education of what to avoid or how to modify your movements. There's X amount of fluid pressure within these discs, and there are certain postures or activities that increase the fluid pressure, and so it puts more pressure on the part of the disc that's been injured. And there's other movements and activities to decrease the fluid pressure, move it away from the injured area. And so, again, this is the kind of thing that would happen during the evaluation. But typically, the injections combined with a therapy program give the person the best chance to recover as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and the doctor said that at this point he could even refer him to, like, a neurosurgeon. But we have three little kids at home, too. And so, to rush into back surgery just seems kind of...
I agree. In most cases, unless there's frank weakness and weakness progressing fairly quickly, that makes it more of a surgical emergency or urgency. And certainly any bowel and bladder changes, that's when you want to see a surgeon.
Yeah, he's been having some bowel changes, I guess. That was one thing he noticed. And then he does notice some weakness as well. I mean, he can still walk, but he's in severe pain.
Okay. So. All right. Well, working with this physician, the bowel changes, if he's on pain medications, narcotics, that can mess with the GI system and account for some of those. It's more losing urine incontinence or fecal incontinence or numbness tingling up in the groin or the crotch area. That's when you want to see your physician immediately. But short of that, a rehabilitation program combined with the injections – if he can tolerate, you want to give this a good 8 to 10 weeks before you start thinking about surgery, as long as it doesn't cross the line to the more dangerous neurological issues that we talked about.
Okay.
Good luck.
Good. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks, Claire. Linda in Madison. Hi to you.
Good. Thank you. My son is 15 and he was running on Saturday in soccer. He said he rolled his ankle. I wasn't there. It was blue. He heard something pop, but it got better. The blueness went away after about an hour, and he's walking on it this morning as he leaves for school. We gave him ibuprofen. We iced it. They iced it at the game, and he walks on it. He feels like it could give out on him, and I don't know whether or not he should see a doctor. He doesn't want to, but I don't want to regret it by having something wrong with his healing.
Linda, you got beeped just as you told us his age. What's his age?
I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong with my cell phone. He's 16.
Okay. I would have him seen myself, just because you can have a little avulsion fracture. If you roll it all the way in, you can pull off a little piece of the bone down at the tip of that bone on the outside of your ankle. And you want to know about that. So I'd go in and have him checked. And if he's feeling like it's a little bit wobbly, then he, you know, chances are he either sprained a ligament or he pulled off a little piece of bone. Either of those scenarios could have happened, but he's going to want to get on a rehab program, especially if he's a soccer player. I have three soccer players, and I know the stresses that they put on their ankles. And so he needs a rehabilitation program to get him back into soccer, because you can end up with what's called chronic ankle instability, and it's just nasty. You don't want to do that. The other thing you should know is you shouldn't give him ibuprofen for the first 24 hours, only acetaminophen. Mm-hmm. Because the anti-inflammatory can inhibit the normal healing cascade. So you don't want to give them ibuprofen for the first 24.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'd have him seen. I'd have him checked. He's okay. 16, so.
Yep.
Right. Okay.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
Sally, kind of along the lines here, sprained my ankle 2 weeks ago when I twisted my foot away to the inside. I walk well with a sock-like compression brace that goes from just above the ankle to midway down my foot. Any need to seek further treatment as long as I can walk on it? And how do I ease back into exercise?
Well, you know, as long as you're walking on, if that's all you do in your life, then that would be fine. But chances are, if she's going back to other things, she's going to want to have it checked out. Again, you can end up with things problem called chronic ankle instability. So you sprain it once, you injure those ligaments, then they're just more likely to be re-injured again. Typically, the ankle is a very stable joint when you're walking straight forward. But if you have any kind of twist or torsion to your ankle, moving sideways, walking on an uneven surface, such as walking across the grass or a rocky surface, if you're hiking at all on trails, that uneven surface will be really hard on your ankle joint. So, if you see somebody for a visit or two and get a good strengthening program, a balance program to rehabilitate yourself, I think it's money well spent up front rather than trying to fix it later.
Yeah, 2 weeks. If it's a minor, really minor ankle sprain, they should be doing lots better and not really wearing a brace at this point.
Okay.
And so the fact she's still wearing it suggests there could be more, you know, have been more damage than just a really minor sprain. And then you're set up for major issues down the road.
Okay, we turn next to Ann in Milwaukee. Hi, Ann.
Hi, good morning. I have pain in the bump sticking out at the base of my big toe, which I think is probably a bunion. And this started in this past February after lots of cross-country skiing this wonderful winter. And I'm just wondering what kind of recommended exercises there are. Are there any online sources for exercises to help with this?
You know, I think that's the first time I've heard the word wonderful used in conjunction with winter this year.
Or a bunion.
Obviously, somebody who loves cross-country skiing.
Or it could have been a sarcastic wonderful.
Yes, it could have. Yes, it could have. Yes.
No, it was not sarcastic.
Oh, okay. Well, bunions are usually due to an imbalance in your foot posture. And for you, are you a skater?
No, strider.
Okay. All right, because a skater would be more prone to have that bunion because of the forces on the inside of the foot. You should be seeing that first joint of your, it's called your first MTP joint in your foot, is really important for maintaining balance and your ability to walk normally. So typically people get a bunion there when they're rolling off the inside of their foot too early, and it pushes your big toe to the outside, and you end up with what's called a valgus deformity of that toe, and then you can't get shoes that fit, and all the shoes hurt that part of your foot, and then you get arch pain, and on and on and on. So if I were you, I would go in and have my foot examined, have someone look at it, look how you stand, look how you walk, look how you move, and make some recommendations, some splints, some arch strengthening, some arch supports. There's a number of different approaches, but understanding why that happened will lead you to the correct answer for you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Pam in La Crosse, hi.
Hi there. My question is, do you think that there really is a connection between an achy back and changes in air pressure?
The answer is yes. And I'm sure we have people out there who tell you they have an achy knee or big toe or hip as well with weather changes, the atmospheric pressure changes, more so related with arthritic conditions. Mm-hmm. When the atmospheric pressure changes, it does impact the pressure that we have within the joints in our body. And for some people, it can they can tell you before the meteorologist can tell us that there's a front coming in. So there is a connection for many people.
And there's nothing to do about it. You just live through that, right? I mean, you know, obviously, unless you want to take some pain medication.
Well, there's, you know, hopefully the pain fluctuates with other things besides just weather fronts coming in and out. I mean, I hear this fairly often in the clinic, and typically it's not only when the weather changes. They also have the backache when they walk too far or lift too much or sit too long. Those are things that we can modify and attempt to change. And there's times when you make improvements in these other functional activities that the weather change makes has less of an impact. But if it truly only comes on or only worsens with the weather changes, you know, then there's probably a little less than that we could do.
Mm. Okay. I suspect that I do probably have some arthritis in my hip. And so I notice it more when the weather changes, but that's just something I live through.
Yeah, well, it is. It's relatively common. And so, you know, again, clinically, we just approach it like we would with any other joint that has some arthritis in it. And so, you know, looking at flexibility, looking at strength, looking at footwear when we're thinking about the hip or the low back area and ways to lessen the load on the joint structures themselves. Sometimes can make a difference with what you're experiencing along with the other functional activities, like I mentioned.
And thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. They'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. Quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you're trying to keep your good physical health and you're doing a lot of great exercising, and you don't have any aches or pains or sprains or strains. However, if you do have some problems, you are listening to the right radio station right now. Larry Mueller here. Our guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, they know a whole lot about exercise and physical therapy and managing injuries, and they're here to take your questions. So I hope you'll call us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Lots of callers online, so I think we'll go right to the phones and to Tom and Nina. Tom, thanks a lot for waiting. Hi.
Hi there. I'm a 62-year-old male. It's spring fly fishing season, so I'm out in the streams. And four or six hours, I developed a sort of a cramping in my right. I'm right-handed, so below my shoulder blade and my back, the muscles start cramping up. I'm a regular exerciser, aerobics, and I do weight training, you know, 3 days a week. What can I do to help prevent that cramping from occurring without giving up fishing?
Yeah, have you fly fished for a long time? Is this something?
I fly fish for about 25 years, so
okay.
I'm a long time fly fisher, but I hit it pretty intensely when after March 1.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Tom, do you ever get this cramping at any other time besides the fly fishing?
Nope, just fishing.
Okay, all right, and it takes 4 to 6 hours. That's pretty standard for you.
Then after it occurs, you know, for a day, then it comes back faster.
Right. Okay. All right. That makes sense. Well, there's a couple things. You know, It could simply be a muscle fatigue issue, where you just the muscles run out of gas from an endurance perspective. My guess is when you work out or exercise, you're not doing anything for hours in terms of strengthening upper body. The other thing that could be a factor is your mid-back and upper back flexibility and your shoulder range of motion. If there's any stiffness, and I'm thinking more middle and upper back, if there's any stiffness there, then as you're casting, the muscles are working harder. They're fighting against that tightness or that stiffness. One of the things that you can try is, I don't know if you've seen where you work out, people using a foam roller or an exercise ball to stretch their mid-back and upper back, or if you're at a club where you could work with a personal trainer, or if there's a physical therapist on staff that can look at your mid-back flexibility. And okay, there's some really good ways to stretch that area out, which could help the muscles in terms of the load falling on the muscles. And then let that person know what activity this is cramping is associated with, and see if they can give you maybe a couple other exercises to work that muscle group. But again, it's tough to exercise the muscle to that level of endurance.
Exercises are what I should focus on, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, and especially for that, the rib cage and that mid back and upper back, I bet you can get a lot of mileage out of doing that. And there's some really good ways, using a foam roller in particular, stretching over it on your side, both sides, not just the right side being up, and then lying on your back on the foam roller and stretching more in a backward bending direction.
Okay.
But I would give that a whirl.
All right. Good luck.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, and good luck fishing as well, Tom. Thank you. Nick in Onalaska, your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I got a problem going on with my inner knee on my right side. I mow lawns for a living, and I walk all day. We don't ride on anything. And after the first couple weeks, I've noticed on my inner knee it's really starting to hurt, and to the point where last Friday when I was mowing, I couldn't even go up the hill without just like limping the whole way.
Oh boy!
How long have you been doing this activity? I mean, are you is this what you do every summer? You do
every single year.
Every single year. Okay. And what other kinds of activities? It only bothers you during the mowing? Are you sure it's
the
mowing?
That's all I do. I don't do anything else landscape wise. I'm basically.
Okay, and when you go up the stairs, it hurts also? How about downstairs?
Yep, when I go up and downstairs.
Okay.
Really, just kind of walking around the house, I can tell it's there.
Okay.
But up and down the stairs, and especially, like, when I was mowing on the flats, it wasn't that bad.
Okay, and is it way on the inside of your knee, or is it more around to the front?
It's closer to the calf than like way on the inside.
Okay, all right. Because when we talk about stuff way on the inside, we think meniscus or cartilage. I'm thinking if you're mowing lawns for a living, you sound like you're younger. It's probably not.
I'm 27.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a degenerative issue. It sounded more like a kneecap issue.
Okay.
And I think what you're saying.
I am overweight. I've always been a bigger guy.
Okay. So the walking on uneven surfaces, uneven ground puts a lot of stress on your kneecap, and what you can do is stir up the cartilage on the undersurface of your kneecap. It's called patellofemoral pain, and the classic symptoms are pain with sitting, prolonged sitting, or up and down stairs. And so walking up hills is going to be the same thing. So so typically, I would want you to see somebody for that, because there are a number of factors that contribute to this. So the reason, you got tipped over was probably all the walking from mowing. But again, you're walking with your left knee also. So why are you only having symptoms on the right side? So somebody needs to look at you and look at your kneecap and look at your alignment and see if you have a foot posture issue, if it's some tightness around your kneecap, if it's too much flexibility around your kneecap, if it's hip weakness. There's so many different causes of kneecap pain that it's worthwhile seeing somebody for one or two visits to figure out what the cause of your kneecap pain is, so they can give you the correct treatment for it. In the meantime, what I would do is I would ice it, and I might go to a drugstore and get one of those pull-on knee sleeves that has a hole cut out for your kneecap. And sometimes just that little bit of additional stability can help get you through the day.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, it's just me and a couple other guys, so I have to work. So
right, you got to work. And also look at your shoe wear. What kind of shoes do you wear?
Just cross training ones with Nike.
Okay,
are they
in pretty good shape?
They probably could be in better shape.
Okay, you might consider changing up your shoes and getting a newer pair, particularly if you're one of those people who takes your shoes on and off without untying them, because foot posture is a fairly significant contributor to kneecap pain. And if you break down the back part of your shoe, the heel counter that controls the stability of your heel and the posture of your heel, because you take it on and off without untying them, then you lose the control of the rest of your foot. So I kind of imagine someone who's mowing the lawn, walking on uneven surfaces, you're going to want a shoe that fits well and has a good stable counter to help control your foot posture, to help control your knee posture. So that might be something else you could do.
Anything you recommend?
No, because it would depend upon your foot posture. So if I would go somewhere where they know something about shoe selling. Like, don't go to a big box store where no one will help you, because there's different, they call it a last on the bottom of the foot. There's some that are curved, some that are straight, and some that are better for a certain foot posture. And every brand will make a straight last and a curved last. So you kind of need someone who knows what they're doing.
Buying shoes.
Okay, then go someplace where they know what they're doing. You're in Onalaska. You should be able to find a good reputable shoe store with salespeople who know what they're doing.
And if you wear tennis, you wear tennis shoes all the time.
Yeah,
I mean, there's some good running. Oftentimes, there are good running stores.
Yeah,
where they do a good job of evaluating.
Yeah, yep. So I'd probably go with that.
Good luck, Nick.
Get started, Nick.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. We have Bill in La Crosse up next with a question. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good to talk to you. I had a wonderful ski season up until nearly the end, but then I had an accident. And I landed on a right shoulder, which I'm right-handed, and tore a rotator cuff. The surgeon, the orthopedic surgeon, didn't think I was a candidate for that, so I went into physical therapy, two different physical therapists, and continued that still, but it has not solved the problem, and it hurts my tennis game poorly and my golf game also. So I'm trying to figure out what else can I do, because I'm doing physical therapy at home now.
It's always miserable when it happens right near the end of the season.
I know.
You want to do all these new things.
Well, it didn't knock me out of skiing, but it's hurting my tennis and golf.
Right.
Yeah.
So how are you during the day when you're not playing tennis or golf, just at rest? Does it hurt?
It doesn't hurt unless I reach way up or way behind me.
Okay.
If I reach behind me, then it hurts.
Okay. And was this a complete rotator cuff tear?
I don't think it was, because when the physician asked me to raise my arm up, I could raise it up. I just couldn't do anything with it after I got it up there, like lift anything or hit an overhead serve or overhead shot in tennis. And so it must not have been totally torn.
And so you're doing some rehab exercises. You're doing like some band exercises and things?
Exactly.
And those things are down with your elbow close to your side and such?
Mostly.
Okay.
Mostly. I do them different kinds, and I'm also in a exercise program where I do weights.
Okay. Okay. Are you doing anything?
At 85, I'm getting weaker all the moment.
Okay.
This has weakened me quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. So are you doing any kind of resistive exercises that look like a golf swing or a tennis swing?
I have a golf club with a weight on the end of it. I've tried that, and I've...
And how was that?
These bands. Well, I can still swing it. I just don't have much power when I hit it.
Okay. All right. It sounds to me like you're your rehab program needs to be progressed to the next phase. So, you know, they got you over the initial hump of the initial injury and probably got some strength back. But because of your activity level, you need sort of a next phase exercise program that looks like an exercise program to get you back to sport. You know, one of the issues is insurance companies don't like to pay for rehab to get people back to sport. So sometimes the tendency is to discharge you once you're functional in your daily activities. So you're going to need to find someone or somewhere who can help get you to that next level. And a physical therapist should be able to do that, particularly someone who specializes in sports. And just because you're 85 doesn't mean you're not going to go back to sport. So tweaking your exercise program to see if they can get a little bit more out for you with the margins might be helpful. There's no guarantee, because if you did tear it, then you're relying on other muscle groups to compensate for your torn rotator cuff. So you may not end up with as much power. But as Bill said earlier, if you can steal a little bit of motion from your upper back, sometimes that can give you a little more power. But you need someone who understands the mechanics of the sport and who can help you with the next phase of your rehab.
Yep. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Bill. Appreciate it. I want to give a note here from Sue in Shenequa, who emailed us and has back pain, or has pain running up the back of her leg. She says, I have been told it's probably sciatic pain. What about the treatment for this pain?
Yeah, you know, typically you think nerve pain running down the leg because the irritation's up in the back and the sciatic nerve extends down into the leg, but it can seem like it shoots up the leg to the back. Well, as I mentioned before, there are a series of exercises designed to get pain from the lumbar spine out of the leg up toward the back. And generally, the further down the leg the pain is, the more irritated things are in the back. I guess my question for Sue would be, is has she been examined to make sure it is a back problem and not a nerves irritated somewhere in her leg? Because then the treatment approach would be very different. My sense would be, if this has been going on for more than 2-3 weeks and she's not getting any better, if she has any numbness or tingling with this, along with the pain, that she go and see a practitioner for this and really determine, is it her back? There's nerve irritated in the leg, and that would kind of dictate the rehab program for her.
Mary Beth in Springfield, Illinois, has a question for you. Hi, Mary Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Okay, well, I'm 21 years old, and I was playing an intramural sport at school. I was playing football, and a bigger guy had a cleat on. He stepped on my foot, and it swelled up. I had the doctor check it out, and I had an x-ray. He said that everything was fine and nothing was broken. He had broke the skin through my shoe, though, however, and the bone, it kind of hardened afterwards. But a few weeks ago, this happened back in August, a few weeks ago, however, I was taking a shower, and just that ankle had swelled up again. So I didn't know if there was still damage to it.
Well, there certainly could be. So you had x-rays, is that right?
Yeah, I had x-ray of my ankle and my foot, and he said that there was nothing broken and nothing wrong with it.
Okay, well, you know, again, depending upon the views that they took, you know, that may or may not be true. Sometimes, because there are so many little bones in the foot, then unless you get x-rays from a certain angle, there are things you can miss. So that's the first one. The second thing is, even though there may not have been an injury to the bone, certainly there was an injury to the soft tissue. So you could have had a midfoot or an ankle sprain that, as you continue to be active on it, is not completely healed, that needs to be addressed. The third possibility is that you sustain what we call an osteochondral injury, and that is sometimes you can damage the cartilage on the surface of the bones, particularly around the ankle joint itself as it sits in this mortise. Particularly if there's a twist to it, you can sustain an osteochondral injury, and that won't be detected on a standard radiograph either. So it would not be normal for your ankle to just swell up months after that injury. So you should go back and have it reexamined.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Lucy in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about bone pain. Over the years, I've been experiencing pain in my lower back, general pelvic area, once in a while in one of my knees, and sometimes in my feet. And lately, I've been having a lot of the lower back pain, and I've gone into urgent care for abdominal pain, and they did a CT scan. And in the report, it said that I had degeneration in my lower back. My mother is arthritic in many different areas, and I'm wondering if this is just bad genes for arthritis. I've not done anything with regards to seeing a specialist or anything. Any advice?
Okay. Well, degenerative joint disease or osteoarthritis is common in the low lumbar area, the low back area, as it is in the knees and the hips. Many people have pretty significant arthritic changes that you see on the image that have minimal or no pain. And there's other people that have minimal arthritic changes and have some pretty horrendous pain. So there's not always a match of what you see in the image and what people have symptomatically. So I wouldn't necessarily view this as you're doomed forever in terms of the low back and the pelvic aching. But with involvement of some of the other joints, if you haven't seen a physical therapist for the low back complaints or the leg complaints, it'd probably be worthwhile. It sounds like you're fairly active or trying to stay active. And it may be that you need some core strengthening. It may be you need some flexibility around the hips to take pressure off that back. But the therapist would go through with you what activities seem to cause more pain, where you get relief, and that will help guide their examination. So what you're describing could be related to the joint degeneration that they found, but it may not, because there isn't always a correlation.
Okay.
So getting examined, I think somebody could help sort this out for you and then give you some good guidance of what to do and let them know about the other joints that you've had involved, because that may be impacting your back too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I recently went for a massage and walked out of there in greater pain in my lower back. So is a massage not a good idea when you know you have degeneration?
Well, no, massage can be a good thing for people who have degeneration. It's just a matter of there are different types of massage and the type of techniques that they were using. You know, when you go to someone who's licensed, usually they ask you some questions about existing symptoms and they're checking in with your back or pelvic pain as they're massaging you. But, you know, muscles can be a source of pain. And so massage generally has a lot of benefits to it. But again, the fact that it was a good thing to try, but the fact you reacted the way your back reacted the way that it did, again, I think it would, again, tells me that seeing a physical therapist to examine you could help sort that out too.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe trying a different person to do the massage.
That's right.
It would probably be
helpful. And they might be able to give you some recommendations in that regard.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. In our last minute or so here, any advice as we are finally into spring?
Yay. Yeah. Well, just, you know, start slowly, as always. And, you know, we're all terrible. I'm just as bad for it. I spent all afternoon yesterday putting in some plants that a friend had given me, you know, because I didn't want them to die. You know, they were all just, you know, dug up from her garden. And I kept pushing on the shovel. And I remember when I dug out a bush a few weeks ago, all the pushing down on the shovel for a week, my kneecaps hurt so bad. And I thought, okay, am I going to have kneecap pain now for a week?
Right.
So
are you going to be calling in on the show?
I'm going to be calling
in
the show saying what to do about my kneecap pain. So, you know, we all have our good intentions, but you know, try to be thoughtful.
We had good calls today, as we usually do. And again, the general premise of exercising for health and not for injury. And we see so many people in the clinic that I have good intentions and start a program and end up developing pain, enough pain that they come in that need to be seen. And again, transitioning and dosing. You know, we've talked about, you know, people know how to dose medications, but we dose activity and exercise in a very similar way.
Well, we will look forward to your next visit, which is June 16th, Monday, June 16th. In the meantime, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Pleasure as always.
Bill Boisenall from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Thanks for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.